The state's tough fiscal picture is forcing cuts across all departments, and that means reductions in services. One of the most concerning stems from fewer dollars for the budgets of law enforcement and public safety. In a state that already has perennially high rates of crime, how will state and local governments cope with legal requirements in a time of reduced spending? Will it require more public-private partnerships to meet the need for maintaining order? Public safety and keeping the peace with less money is our topic today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Most Alaskans know the dubious distinctions our state has for being at the top or very near it for sexual assault, domestic violence, and lawlessness in areas where it might be a few hundred miles to the nearest trooper outpost or a long flight out to roadless communities. Trying to reduce the high rates of crime in Alaska has been stubbornly difficult and will be more challenging with 6.3% reductions to the public safety budget, 6.8% to corrections, and more than 13% cut to the State Department of Law. We're discussing safety today in our communities, our homes, and even on the trails that so many of us enjoy using. Here to discuss what these cuts will mean and how they'll work to be creative in meeting the need of law enforcement in the future is the head of the Alaska State Troopers, Colonel James Cockrell. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Captain Andrew Merrill, also of the Troopers. Good morning.
Good morning.
Captain Merrill works with the VPSO program. We'll be talking about safety in rural Alaska. This is a statewide conversation. We're also joined by newly minted Mayor Ethan Berkowitz to discuss how Alaska's largest city will respond to the need for reducing crime. Welcome, Mayor Berkowitz.
Glad to be here.
Thank you so much. And you can, of course, join our conversation as well. The number statewide is 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255. Locally, it's 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Colonel Cockrell, let's start with a statewide look at what the reductions for troopers means. How many positions are cut and where?
Okay, first of all, I'd like to thank you for the invitation to discuss public safety around the state of Alaska. I'm certainly privileged to be the director of the Alaska State Troopers during these challenging years. Overall, the Department of Public Safety took about a $14 million reduction. Out of that, approximately $9 million came out of the division of the Alaska State Troopers. So what that means, in a sense of kind of numbers games, we lost 27 trooper positions. We went from 328 authorized positions to 301. We also lost our we lost our four cold case investigators that were investigating cold case murders or serious criminal acts, and we're one reduction right now of our search and rescue helicopter to one stationed in Fairbanks. We also were forced to close our couple of our posts. We closed our Talkeetna post. As you know, we're moving out of the Girtwood area the first of the year. And then we closed an Inilchik post down on the Kenai Peninsula. And if you look overall, I think what early on what people noticed is, we had to disband our Borough Highway Patrol, our troopers that were assigned strictly to enforce traffic regulations along our highway safety corridors and high-intensity areas where we had traffic in the Fairbanks, Mat-Su, and Kenai Peninsula. So when you look at that, our troopers in BHP, they contact about 25,000 motorists, issue about 14,000 tickets, and arrest, 300 to 400 DUIs each year. Plus, they also investigate all our serious motor vehicle crashes and our fatalities. So what that'll do is the impact there is, since we lost those trooper positions, we'll end up having to have our patrol troopers handle those serious crashes, which, you know, can take them out of the field for 4 to 6 hours investigating, which means they're not answering our normal, what we call patrol-related calls for services. So certainly it's going to have an impact in our more urban areas like the Matsu Valley and Fairbanks and the Kenai Peninsula. And also in rural Alaska, even though our focus is in rural Alaska, as you know, we have a high incident of sexual assault and domestic violence, certainly a priority of our department and will continue to be a priority of our department. In the YK area, which is Yukon Delta out of Bethel, our sexual assaults are staggering, the numbers that we're dealing with out there. So we're still trying to keep a priority to rural Alaska. However, one of the things that is impacting is our travel budget, which will mean where we have a pretty vibrant village visit program, community outreaches in our villages, we're going to get forced to just respond to our villages when we have complaints of criminal activity and stuff. We prefer to be a lot more proactive, and we're still going to try to focus on that, but that's where we're going to, I think, where the villages and those regions of the state are going to see the big difference, our routine visits that we're just not going to be able to do.
And those routine visits, is that something that helps you? Well, I would imagine it helps you build relationships with people so that you're not just coming in a time of crisis. People already know you. And how much does that impact the level of trust that communities have for law enforcement when things are calm and how they respond when you come in than when there's a crisis?
Well, prior to if you want to call it our village visit program, the department was always criticized. The only time we'd show up to villages, arrest somebody. And that was what we got known for. We just, we'd arrest somebody, leave the village, and there was no outreach and there was no interaction. So now we're pretty good at assigning certain troopers to certain villages, and their job is to go in the villages every chance they get, not only to investigate crimes, but go to potlatches, go to community events, basketball games, and that, to build that trust in our uniform. Because realistically, when people see our uniforms in those villages, it's a sign of hope. And they know that we're there. They can relax, and there's just a big difference when we're there. It's one of the things that we do very well proactively, and it certainly adds a sense of safety in their villages. And I'll let Captain Merrill talk specifically about the VPSO program, but we interface very close with the VPSOs and VPOs working in those villages.
Right. And I do want to get to that in a bit, Captain Merrill. But of the 27 positions that were lost, were all of those currently filled or are some of those empty? What's the impact to current staffing?
Well, because we anticipated the essentially the budget reductions and the loss of trooper positions, we weren't filling vacancies. And currently we're at 301 filled positions are authorized. However, we still have to maintain about a 5% vacancy factor. So at some point, I'm going to have to get down to about 285, 287 just to meet our budget obligations. And So eventually we're going to get, even though we're authorized 301, there's no way we have funding for 301 for 365 days during the fiscal year.
Hmm. And the geographic range of a trooper, I'm sure it varies widely, but is there some kind of average or estimate about how large the area is that a trooper has to be watching over?
I don't think I can give you that. Okay. We got troopers from Ketchikan, and our furthest one north is in Selawik. We have expanded we've got some 2-and-2 posts to try to provide more trooper presence in rural Alaska, so Selawik would be our furthest north. I can tell you on a given shift, like in the Matsu Valley, where we have about 80,000, 85,000 people that we service. And I was just talking to one of the shift sergeants the other day. He had 4 troopers to cover that whole area. That's from Talkeetna to Sheep Mountain to the Butte to Meadow Lakes to Willow. So you can see how come sometimes our response times can be up to several hours before we get to a lower priority call in some of those areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about the impacts to community jails and, of course, the VPSO program, but I want to get Mayor Berkowitz in here. Mayor, you recently convened transition teams for what are considered and what were identified as some of the most pressing problems in Anchorage or issues that need to be looked at. 5 were settled on. Let's talk about what was identified for addressing public safety. Give us kind of the priorities in that area.
The priorities, we carved them out into 60-day priorities, 6-month priorities, and 3-year priorities. And the immediate need is to make sure that the streets are as safe as possible. We'd like to see an increase in the number of police officers that are available in the city, in the municipality of Anchorage. We're at about 356 officers now, sworn officers. I'd like to see 400. The expert advice that we got should be at least 423. It makes me think of what Jim Cockrell was just talking about. They're down to 285, and I would suspect that optimally they'd want somewhere north of 350 for a statewide number of troopers. But with the impact we're seeing with the reduction of troopers in two places here in the municipality, first is if they pull the troopers out of Girdwood, APD is going to have to backfill that. So a state cut results in an increased responsibility at the local level. Similarly, when APD has to backfill when the troopers come off the highway in a lot of ways. And so there's an increased demand for local services. And so there's a real imperative for the state to get its fiscal house in order. Otherwise, it's simply just passing cost on to the local level.
Mm-hmm. It's difficult to talk about safety without also getting into the issue of homelessness and how people at the lower economic rungs of society are faring. There's been homeless deaths. There were getting reports that there were more last night.
Yes.
People living outside. And you've identified kind of an aggressive approach to housing. How do you see those two coming together to help create safety for the people who are homeless, but also other citizens when some of these folks might be getting desperate on the street?
There's a moral dimension to make sure that we're taking care of those least able to take care of themselves. And, you know, just as the troopers go into the villages as a way of doing community policing and building trust, it's important for APD and other local police agencies to have a degree of community policing. But one of the ways that we can reduce costs that that APD has is to reduce the type of emergency calls. And so when the police are responding or the fire department is responding to a situation where there's an individual who is unable to take care of himself or herself, that's a high-cost way of dealing with a problem, a more compassionate as well as a fiscally more responsible way of dealing with the homelessness issue is quite simple, is you make sure that there's housing. In some ways, it's just cutting a Gordian knot, is you solve homelessness with housing.
In your campaign, you made adding more officers. You were just talking about that part of your platform. How did that idea align with the Public Safety Committee recommendations, and how do you think that can be achieved in a time when we're talking about less money?
You know, it's really interesting. I'm looking at the huge public outcry that accompanies the drawdown on J-Bear, on the bases here, and I would have hoped that there'd be an equivalent public outcry when there's reductions in public safety. And anytime you've got cuts to public safety, there might not be a specific incident that people can point to and say, this is a result of a cut. But overall, there's going to be more incidents, more challenges to public safety, more public danger. And in little ways, just when you have these kind of cuts to public safety, it's sort of like boiling a frog. As the temperature's going up and the danger's increasing, you're not going to see a specific incident. But the Anchorage experience has been when we pulled back from the traffic unit, there were more traffic accidents. There are more road fatalities. And so there's a consequence to having these budget cuts. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about where you're going to prioritize, you have to have a fair economic assessment of what the cost of the cuts are and why it's a priority to make sure that public safety is attended to, and how actually, if you look at the big picture, it's less expensive to provide for public safety than to ignore it or to cut it.
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-8255. We're talking about public safety in a time of state budget cuts and how to keep the peace into the future. 550-8422 is the local number, 550-8422, or talk@alaskapublic.org. And before we move back to statewide issues, Mayor Berkowitz, a number of years ago, there was a special vice unit that had a big presence downtown where officers were walking the streets. They were walking through bars in the evening. I went on a ride along with them. And it seemed to be a really effective idea that it was just officers kind of putting their eyes on who was in the taverns and whether or not it looked like there was some potential for trouble later on in the evening. They were looking for people who were were buying drinks but not drinking themselves. Maybe.
Well, Lori, maybe it was effective because you were with them.
Maybe that's it. I looked intimidating. But it seemed like it was kind of the old cops walking the beat sort of a thing. And do you see beat cops in the future for the city?
You know, there's a certain irony that we talk about going back to beat cops. That's where the origin of policing came from. When you originally had policing, it came out of London, I believe. That's what they did, is you just had officers walking around and being visible. And so part of having an effective police force, part of the deterrent effect is to be visible. But there's a spectrum of requirements for policing to be effective. It's not just responding to bad action and chasing bad guys. It's also preventing bad things from happening. And to the extent that you can have what's come to be known as community policing, where you have law enforcement getting to know the community getting to know law enforcement, there's a nice symbiotic relationship there, which results in increased public safety, more trust in law enforcement, and fewer incidents of crime because you're able to spot the precursors to bad behavior before they occur.
Mm-hmm. So is that an idea that you see maybe this vice unit coming back into being where they would have a presence in? I know that there's an idea of sort of a public private partnership with some of the downtown businesses talking about the potential of funding a grant for more police presence at bar break time. In that mix, is there room for these police officers that would just be going through and putting eyes on people?
There's definitely room for that. And this is one of the opportunities that we have with the state's fiscal situation right now, is we're going to have to look for innovative solutions to doing business the way we have been doing it in the past. I mean, the troopers have some distinct challenges. I mean, we talk about sort of the appropriate ratios of officers per population, but when you add in the added dimension that Alaska is so huge, we've got an acreage challenge as well that we have to overcome. So we have an opportunity to try and craft different solutions.
If you're concerned about safety in your community in the future, or if you're seeing the impacts already of cuts, let us know. 1-800-478-8255 or locally 550-8422. Colonel Cockrell, let's talk about impacts to community jails. There are currently 15. Will they all survive with reduced budgets, or are some of them closing?
Well, I can't answer that directly because I'm not the Commissioner of Corrections. However, their normal budget, I think, is about $10 million this year. They reduced to $7 million, and it certainly impacted the 15 community jails around the state. And as a department, we're dealing with those reductions, too, because they're limiting their number of in-custody holds or they're shortening their stays, which means since the Alaska State Trooper is in charge of transporting any in-custody pre- and post-arraignment prisoners, we've now picked up that slack and we're doing a lot more prison moves between the community jails to our bigger facilities, which is a draw of manpower. And in certain areas, we do have court security officers and they're assigned to do prisoner moves, but when they're overtasked, that means we have to use an Alaska State Trooper doing that. So if I got an Alaska State Trooper making a prisoner move, I don't have them out on the road. I don't have them doing criminal investigations. And it's certainly indirectly impacting our operations, not only a little bit financially, but I'm more concerned about just the manpower drain it's caused. And I know there's a lot of concerns talking to the chiefs and the communities. It's certainly impacting them because they're not only paying for their community jails, they're also paying for dispatch positions, jailers, and some places are paying for or help funding their police department. So that it's certainly impacting the smaller communities.
And the community, some of the community jails are, as you were discussing, limiting the number of days that they will hold someone. I think the Petersburg jail is going from 15 to 9 days. They're talking about reducing. So it seems like sort of a self-perpetuating problem with this idea that you're going to have to do quicker transports that takes more troopers out of the mix. And also the transportation costs must just be astronomical. What is there, are there folks looking at that and trying to figure out creative ways of how you're going to meet those demands in the future with fewer people and less money in the travel budget?
We're currently working close with Department of Corrections to try to either coordinate prisoner moves a lot more efficiently than we're doing. We're about 25, 26 days into the new fiscal year, so we're still, kind of filling it out. I know they've made some adjustments to a couple of community jails to help us out. In particular, they just signed an agreement with Kotzebue for they would take our pre-arraignment arrestees. If not, we had to hire a jail guard. So we are looking at things and other options. I know Department of Corrections is looking at a lot more home monitoring with ankle monitors and more pre-release prisoners, so to cut down our transports. So I don't know that we'll know the whole impact till further into the fiscal year, probably around the first of the year prior to the session.
So there might have to be more alternative ways of keeping eyes on folks, as you mentioned, ankle monitors. Are there other available technologies or things that you can use in addition to those that maybe you can still keep tabs on someone without them being locked up?
Well, you're kind of going past my expertise, and I think I'll let you talk to Department of Corrections on that, because
okay.
I know that they've got several innovative ways that they're looking at holding, if you want to call it holding prisoners and doing home arrest and that, but I'm certainly not the expert to discuss that.
Sure. The troopers are pulling out of some of the Turnagain Arm communities, Girdwood, Portage, Indian, Bird, which technically fall under the municipality of Anchorage. And I know that there's going to be a transition, and I'd like you and the mayor to both address that. But why were troopers patrolling these areas in the first place?
Well, I think it was, kind of a longstanding. We started in the municipality on the hillside, and eventually we pulled off the hillside. And traditionally, I think Girdwood's always been a special post to the troopers. It's certainly a highway post that passed through to the Kenai Peninsula, and there really was never a real movement to move out of Girdwood. There's two reasons currently we're looking at moving out of Girdwood. We're losing five trooper positions on the Kenai Peninsula, and it's essentially resource-related. They are in the municipality of Anchorage. I certainly feel that the municipality of Anchorage has an obligation to provide police services there. We do plan to keep the only three Bureau Highway Patrol troopers assigned to the Seward Highway, especially to the, because of the high intensity and the traffic, the safety corridors for the meantime. And I pledged to the mayor 2 weeks ago that we would work with APD to try to augment their patrols with our BHP patrols. But primarily we want our highway troopers focused on the highway, taking care of any accidents that they come by. But if you look at what we've done, even with our Bureau Highway Patrol, if you look at the overall serious crashes on our highway, especially the Seward Highway, our fatalities on the Seward Highway, they're all down because of the work that they're doing out there. Prior to July 1st, you could go on any big week on the Kenai Peninsula and probably see 6 to 7 patrol cars working that road, and it does make a difference. The dangerous drivings went down, our fatalities and serious accidents went down, and the big unfortunate consequences of taking all those troopers off the road is, as the mayor talked about, when they done away with the traffic unit in Anchorage, we know we're going to see more serious accidents. We know we're going to see more fatal accidents on the highways.
1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK is the statewide number, 550-8422, or talk@alaskapublic.org. Mayor Berkowitz, how will this impact and put pressure on you're already trying to meet the need in a city that has big needs for safety, public safety? if APD, when they have to take over Girdwood and some of these outlying communities, how will you meet that need? And are you reaching out to the governor to say, hey, wait a minute, can we work on keeping some of the troopers in these spots?
We're definitely working with the state and the governor's office. Look, the inability of the state to put its fiscal house together and figure it out, and just having a mentality of cut, 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 really isn't cutting the overall amount of money that we have to pay for public safety. If you look at eliminating the troopers or removing the troopers from Girdwood, for example, that's a savings of a couple hundred thousand dollars, perhaps at most, because they're going to be transferred somewhere else. Whereas for us to fully staff it with APD according to the APD requirements, that's about a $2.5 million project. Because there are different levels of policing required for APD to perform its job than the troopers currently have. And for even if we were to take a scaled down version, it is more expensive for Anchorage to step in when the troopers step out. So we've got to find alternative solutions than the one we have now. And it's far more cost effective for us to think creatively than to just accept the idea that we're going to cut our way to some kind of fiscal solvency. It is way more expensive.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about public safety in a time of budget cuts. And when we come back from a short break, we're going to be talking to Captain Merrill about the VPSOs around in rural Alaska and what state budget cuts will mean to the VPSO program as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Garrison Keillor, one of the most beloved radio hosts and acclaimed humorists, is coming to the Alaska State Fair with his America the Beautiful tour on Sunday, August 30th at 3 p.m. This 2.5-hour show will feature Prairie Home Companion classics with piano master Richard Dworsky, sound effects man Fred Newman, and other special guests. Tickets at alaskastatefair.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about public safety in a time of budget cuts. I've got Colonel James Cockrell, the head of the troopers, with us. Also, Mayor Ethan Berkowitz, mayor of Anchorage, and Captain Andrew Merrill. Captain Merrill, you work with the VPSO, the Village Public Safety Officer Program, around the state. How are the cuts impacting VPSOs?
So across the state, as part of the cuts that Colonel Cockrell was talking about, we saw a reduction of 5 support troopers out of my office. Those were 5 positions that were eliminated. Those troopers specifically were designed to support and train VPSOs and provide that expertise to help VPSOs in their villages who don't have all the resources that troopers may have. And so those 5 positions were cut. And they also work on hiring and background checks when we hire VPSOs to make sure they're qualified. That's all going to fall on one support trooper now out of my office here in Anchorage. So we're going to have to rely on other troopers out in the field to help support that backup. So not only are we talking about losing BHP and losing other troopers, cold case, but now troopers in the field are not only going to be responding to traffic accidents, we're going to be asking them to help support the VPSO program by providing that oversight that we've lost with those positions that have been eliminated from the budget. With this year, one of the things we've saw was we are holding the line with where we're at. So we have 78 VPSOs currently working across the state. We have funded 78 positions, and that's all we're going to have for this year. So we're not adding any additional VPSOs. 78 VPSOs for 256 some odd villages is not enough VPSOs. Especially when you're talking, we talk about those time and distances that we're looking at trying to get troopers into the villages. So those VPSOs are kind of being on their own when we talk about cutting the travel budget. Those oversight troopers that travel from Bethel or Kotzebue or Nome that would do those village visits to go out and build community support and then work with their VPSO, provide that moral support and any training, they're not going to be able to make those trips. They're only going to be going out there when they're doing investigations now. So the VPSOs are going to fill that by not having that support. We're still going to support them as best we can, but not as well as we were able to in the past. So we also see other things with the budget cut, overtime reductions. So what we're going to see with the VPSOs is, you know, right now a VPSO lives in a village 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we have struggled always with, you know, people know where the VPSO lives. So if something's happening, if the VPSO just worked an 18-hour day, the community doesn't care. They go knock on the door and say something's happening. The VPSO gets up and goes and helps. And what we're finding is that some of those calls are community service type calls. You know, we have a noise complaint or somebody's just being loud and boisterous at a house and they won't leave the house. And so they call the VPSO and he responds and that person's intoxicated. The VPSO helps to get that person home, resolves the situation without a criminal act actually happening. What we're finding now though is with the reductions in overtime, we're not going to have VPSOs that are going to be able to respond to those types of calls. There are no crimes occurred. There's not an immediate public safety situation. So the VPSO is going to be instructed, you're not going to respond because we don't have the overtime to send you. And so we're going to see, you know, those types of calls, we have to selectively choose what we're going to respond to. And in some circumstances, we're going to choose not to go to some calls. And the public, especially in the villages, are going to be upset that their VPSO is not responding, that they're not coming to this call because it's important to them. But it's not really up to that level of requiring a response at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to see those kinds of impacts. We have great partners in the VPSO program. So a lot of people don't truly understand the program. VPSOs are not employees of the state. VPSOs work for our nonprofit corporations, the native corporations or the borough. We grant the money out to the nonprofits. They administer the program, and we provide the oversight for their law enforcement capacity. But the nonprofits, we have 10 that participate with us now across the state, from Tlingit Haida in Southeast up to Tanana Chiefs in Fairbanks. And what those agencies have done has been spectacular this year. As we sat down and we're looking at budget cuts, we had a lot of, as the mayor mentioned, you know, working together and trying to come up with, you know, these synergistic ideas to solve problems. They came forward. The programs came forward and offered, you know, hey, we don't need this position. We would love to have a VPSO here in this village, but we understand where the budget's at, so we'll hold off. We won't fill that position. You know, we had programs come forward and with nonprofit resources offer to buy equipment for VPSOs and help with search and rescues and build those kinds of things. So those partnerships are very, very important. And I am very lucky to be able to work with 10 agencies that understand the importance of public safety. Northwest Arctic Borough is an exceptional agency that we work with that kind of fosters this idea of going out and, you know, for us, one of the problems we have is infrastructure. And so we don't have the ability to build houses and those things in the villages. And so Northwest is taking the lead on doing that themselves and finding resources and grants federally to help build infrastructure so they can support the program.
Fantastic. Excuse me. We're talking about public safety in a time of budget cuts today on Talk of Alaska. We're going to go to the phones before we go back to questions for Mayor Berkowitz and the state troopers that we have with us today. Dale is in Caltag. Good morning, Dale.
Morning.
Did you have a question?
It seems that the state now has basically a mandate to stop domestic violence, which I'm not in any way downplaying the domestic violence, but the troopers seem to let other things go. I mean, I've been told that shoplifting is not a priority and they won't make a run out here for shoplifting or things like that. The store had been broken into. They basically come in and do a two-minute investigation, and that's all we see. But domestic violence, I mean, they'll charter a plane down here in a heartbeat.
So you think...
I'm wondering if the mandate to stop domestic violence has basically opened everything else up.
All right. Colonel Cockrell, would you like to respond to where the priorities are when troopers are going to villages?
Well, I think, you know, the department has priorities, and anytime we have violence against a person, interpersonal violence, that's a priority of the department, and it will continue to be the priority of the department as long as I'm the director. The same with our sexual assaults that we have in rural Alaska. It's staggering the amount of sexual assaults that we're dealing with every day, from sexual assaults of our minors to, you know, just sexual assaults of teenagers all the way up. And we prioritize calls no different than in CalStag as we do in the Mat-Su Valley. Are we going to charter a flight to go to CalStag to handle a shoplifting? Probably not. Not on a normal basis. We'll handle the cases as they come up, and you know, we prioritize. We got many villages out there, and it just depends on what the serious, the most serious criminal acts are going as we respond to the local communities. We certainly like to get in the communities more than we do. And again, that's one of my fears of the budget reductions. We won't be getting into the villages like we have been in the past. And I certainly, you can pass him my telephone number. If he wants to call my office, I'll certainly be glad to talk to him about it.
All right. So we're going to hang with the phones for just a little bit here and talk with Stu, who is in Anchorage. Good morning.
Thanks, Lori. Officers and Mayor Ethan, thank you for being on the show. I'm Stu. I'm on the Northeast Community Council and chair of the Alcohol Committee. And I have some comments about the Community Action Patrol. Those are the folks that deal with the homeless folks in the park. Our council passed a resolution trying to get citizens to actually take over that job for the most part, especially posting the homeless camps, because the Community Action Patrol obviously is overtaxed and has other concerns, and the task force to stop the drug dealers from shooting each other that took over, three or four months ago when the shootings occurred, took all the Community Action Patrol, and basically our parks filled up with homeless people. And then we just recently had a rape of a minor right in front of the church on Muldoon Road named Sophie, and the guy who did it was a homeless guy in the park and alcohol-related. And we find out he's a registered pedophile. And now we've found out just by poking around that a lot of the people in the parks who are camping illegally are registered pedophiles. They can't get housing anywhere else. And we have this terrible situation. And all they told us to do was, we'll just call the non-emergency number, 786-8900, and report it to dispatch. So we call the tents over and over again. And dispatch says, oh, somebody already called, so you don't have to call. And then the CAP officer tells our council, well, you got to keep calling and make sure they register it, because we won't respond until we get X number of calls. In other words, sir, the system is totally broken. One solution that might be is please allow either the community patrols or some kind of patrol of local citizens to post these camps, and maybe we should consider having all those people that are illegally camping in the park get carded, and the ones that are registered pedophiles send out letters, just like we have when we have people move into our neighborhood who are registered pedophiles, because that's what's filling up the park. And we have this alcohol issue, and boy, our neighborhoods are just getting slammed full of new people coming in, high-density housing, and the parks are becoming more and more important, and they're becoming more and more dangerous. That ACLU case where it said that the homeless can live in the parks for 15 days, well, then the cops don't come in and post. They post them. They wait 15 days, but they often don't post them until 2 weeks after they've been there for 15 days. So they end up being there for a month. They own the place. They leave these terrible messes.
Okay, Stu, let's...
People are scared to go into the park.
Okay, let's give the mayor a chance to respond to this issue. I can hear your frustration, and I'm sure that Mayor Berkowitz and maybe the troopers would also like to respond. But Mayor...
There are a lot of consequences to not having properly sized police departments, properly sized law enforcement. And what winds up happening is law enforcement becomes much more reactive than it would like to be. It's not as proactive. You're not going to see as many officers going into the neighborhoods or walking through the parks or making sure that people who should have registered as sex offenders have actually registered. And so they tend to respond to an emergency situation. Ideally, officers want to have about a third of their time being free to do the kind of community policing that does intercept this kind of behavior before it becomes as problematic as it has become. So we're in Anchorage, we're digging out of a hole. We were down to 320 officers at one point. We're up to 356. We have a ways to go. The troopers statewide have a problem as well. So I would suggest that one of the things that everybody can do is, if public safety is a priority, and every political campaign I've ever been involved in says it's a priority, is you need to make sure that those who are appropriating funds recognize it as a priority and fund it.
Mm-hmm. Let's stay with the phones for a moment here. We've got another call from Anchorage. Representative Les Guerra is on the line. Good morning, Representative Guerra.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on. Hi to the guests. Without even going into some of my disagreements about the budget the past this year, I do want to recognize that Mayor Berkowitz is on the right track in terms of reestablishing neighborhood policing. I represent Fairview. And to have a police officer who knows the community, who knows the residents, who makes the residents feel safe, that makes a big difference. And the loss of police officers we've had the last 3, 5, 6 years in Fairview has really had a detriment on the citizens there. Neighborhood policing works, and I'm glad that he's committed to reestablishing it, because it's been a harm to the community by losing it.
So what about the idea of the community patrols that some neighborhoods have? Some of them are fairly active. How does that work with the police department, Mayor? I know that Nunaka Valley, I see a vehicle that's got amber lights on it, and they've got, you know, Nunaka Valley Patrol on the side of their vehicle. And there's folks that are associated with some of the community councils. What do you see as their role in kind of helping to keep eyes on areas that the police just can't be at all the time?
I think everybody has a responsibility to help make sure our neighborhoods are safe. And to expect the police department or the troopers to be able to stop all crime before it happens and to be in all places at once is just unrealistic. We have a responsibility to intercede. It's one of the reasons why I've helped promote a program through the city and encourage others to do it called Green Dot, where people do acquire the skills to be able to either distract somebody from doing something they shouldn't be doing, or maybe even escalating to the point where they do call law enforcement. But we all live here. You know, we live in Anchorage, we live across Alaska, we live in villages, and we have a responsibility to try and make these communities as safe as possible. And to the extent that we can do it, we should do it.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to zoom down to Juneau now. Chris is on the line from Juneau. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I've got a question. It's more of a policy question, and it may lead to some sort of discussion, but it really comes down to the fact that we have a budget crunch, which is what we're all here talking about. But simply, a lot of communities like Kodiak, Juneau, Hoonah, Anchorage, use local taxes to provide for their law enforcement. And in some cases, and this is going back a few years, but some cases, local communities like North Star Borough, a few others, have dismissed local ordinances so they don't have to provide for their own law enforcement. As we get down into a budget crunch and we sort of work through what's actually needed in local areas, how do we get some of the local communities to pick up their share or their tab for law enforcement and take that off the back of the troopers? That's question many of you may or may not be able to answer, but maybe Ethan, with his legislative experience, can kind of shed some light on that.
Would you like to take a crack at that, Mary Berkowitz?
You look at the historical origins of why we do so many things at the state level in Alaska as opposed to doing it locally. It's because when Alaska got started, we're a young state. The local communities didn't have the ability to take care of many of the things that are done at the county level or at the city level in the lower 48. Troopers is one, the court system is another, some of the jails, the prisons are a third. And we haven't completely evolved to the point where local governments have the ability to take care of those criminal justice needs, but we're going in that direction. But at the same time, as the state retreats from what had been its responsibilities, it has to make sure that local governments have the ability to step into the breach.
And Colonel Cockerell, maybe you'd like to comment on this also. And I'd be interested in knowing, how does Alaska compare to other states in that respect about the responsibility of individual communities as opposed to what the state provides?
Well, I can't say I'm an expert in other states, but a lot of other states have a sheriff's department that fills in, which we would like in the Kenai Peninsula, Matsu Borough, and the Fairbanks North Star Borough. There would be a sheriff's department. We would augment the sheriff's department, focus on probably the outer areas, and then focus on traffic. I do know during this last session there was some discussions, I don't know how serious the discussions, about trying to get the Matsu borough in the Kenai Peninsula to pick up police powers inside the boroughs and actually hire borough police officers or law enforcement. I know there's a current move in the community of Nikiski outside of Kenai to vote on the possibility of setting up a police department to handle the Nikiski area. One of the things that we had tried to do is assign two troopers to the Nikiski area because they're having an increase in mostly property crime, drug-related type crimes, and we actually had eventually pushed it into the budget. And of course, you know, with the reductions in the fall of the oil prices, those positions didn't come to fruition. So, so I think there is a little bit of movement towards that, but we're nowhere near that at this point in time. There's going to have to be a policy issue either by the legislature or by the governor to say and give a deadline in Matsu Borough or the Kenai Peninsula or Fairbanks that such a day the troopers are no longer going to provide police services. But that's going to take time to stand up a police department.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-478-8255 is the statewide number, 1-800-478-8255, or locally in Anchorage, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. Is the idea of privatized security or some companies have provide their own security folks? Are there more ideas in that realm about maybe privatizing some of the needs of security, or does that create a different set of problems?
Well, if you're talking about privatizing security, because certainly the oil companies have a vibrant security force. However, they're not commissioned police officers. They don't have powers of arrest other than citizens' arrest. And, you know, I'm not sure that we're at a point where we want security guards enforcing criminal laws or traffic violations. So I don't know how to answer that would work.
Well, and I guess if you look at the VPSO program, it's kind of a combination of that. Because when you look at the VPSO program, the VPSOs are employees of the nonprofits, but they are granted specific, through statute, specific law enforcement power as peace officers. And so I think it's a hybrid that's there. I know that we've had interest from other countries. I recently met with the U.S. ambassador to Mongolia, who was looking at taking the kind of the model we use for VPSOs in those rural areas. One of the difficulty things we have is when you're looking at communities, villages of 300 to 400 to maybe 500 people, there's not a tax base there. There's no way that that community can support providing law enforcement or paying a law enforcement officer to come in because they don't have, they're living a subsistence lifestyle. They're hunting, fishing, gathering. They're doing those activities to survive with a median income, you know, a couple $1,000 a year. As I sit and I worked in Bethel and Nome for the last 10 to 12 years, when somebody gets bail for $100 and they can't make $100 bail, you realize that, you know, financially those villages are strapped. One of the reasons the VPSO program came into play was the state didn't have the ability to place a trooper in every village. And so what was the best next alternative? Well, it was trying to find somebody from the village that could be a VPSO that could provide those emergency response, not only law enforcement, but fire and EMS services. And so when you look at trying to push that out to the villages, right now we have villages that have VPSOs who don't have the funding sources to even keep what's required by statute. They're required to have an office space, a jail cell, and provide a telephone for the VPSO. We have villages that can't do that right now, who are coming to their nonprofits and coming to the state and saying, we can't afford to pay the heat for this building where the VPSO is, so our VPSO has to go away. And so we're trying to find alternatives to make that happen. So that revenue is a difficult problem for some of those smaller communities.
And I'd like to emphasize, this is a fundamental principle of what governance is all about, is we need to make sure there's access to justice. I mean, every day kids stand up and do the Pledge of Allegiance, which says liberty and justice for all. And if we're not providing public safety in the villages, in the neighborhoods, then we're not doing our job.
Mm-hmm. We are going to continue our conversation about public safety, and I'd like to get to the issue of morale in a time of budget cuts as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about public safety in a time of budget cuts. And Captain Merrill, you were talking about the VPSOs and how some of the villages might have VPSOs, but they aren't able to provide the basic services for that VPSO to have a place to hold people that need to be held until the troopers can get there or something else is happening. This is an issue of security, both for the community and the VPSO. What about the morale of people, both within the VPSO, the Village Public Safety Officer Program, but also the troopers, with facing these cuts and reduced services, reduced funds for overtime and for officers, spreading them even more thin than they are now? What are you seeing, or are you yet seeing impacts to the morale of people that it's important for them to feel that they have enough support and that they have enough security out there in the field? What's happening in that regard?
So I'll speak specifically to the VPSOs. With the no increase of the VPSO positions across the state, it's interesting when you take someone that hasn't been in the bush and they go to a VPSO office and they look at it, and I had the opportunity in Nome to have some delegates from Washington, D.C. come back, and we flew them out, and they actually looked at a VPSO office space, and they were aghast. At the building that these guys were operating in. I mean, we have VPSOs in some locations that are buying heat for their own Toyo stoves in their office just so they can be warm enough to work in their offices. So morale is an interesting, they struggle. I mean, it's difficult to keep, you know, high spirits and hope when you're looking at, you know, reduced overtime. You're being told you can't respond to certain calls because that's what you want to do. And that's I think, the shining light for me in this is when I look at my fellow troopers and I look at the VPSOs, we don't do this job for money. We don't do this job because we're going to get famous or we're going to be popular. We know we're probably going to get sued. We probably know that people are going to spit on us and call us names, and they're going to put YouTube videos out there and say that we're horrible people. We do this because we want to help our communities. We do this because we want to serve our people. And so while there is some lower morale with, you know, cuts in money and cuts in services, and yeah, we have to work out of a building that's not adequate, we do it, and I think a lot of VPSOs, and if you look around, not only at VPSOs, but if you look at VPOs, our village police officers who work for their villages, and we provide training out of my office for those VPOs, they do it without pay a lot of times. Mm-hmm. A lot of our VPSOs respond to calls just because it's the right thing to do. And I think the morale is kind of a big thing, is they do it for the right reason. And while they may be a little depressed about it, and there may be those hard parts for them, they're doing it for the right reason to serve their communities.
Mm-hmm. Colonel Cockrell, morale.
Morale. Well, as a director, I would hope to say the morale in the department's really good with among the troopers. But to be realistic, you know, I think there's a lot of uncertainty with the troopers on the road, because when they face we face the reductions in staff, reduction in monies, they're the ones that are interfacing with the public. They're the ones that have taken essentially the grief from the public, because it took us 2 hours to respond. Mm. And they internalize that, because we're a service-orientated department. We preach that at the academy, to provide service to our people. And when they're not able to do that, not able to do it efficiently and effectively, if, you know, like, again, I'll use the Valley, if we're just taking reports and we're not solving crimes because we're so stacked up in calls, I mean, they internalize it and it affects them. It burns them out. And that's my biggest fear, is as we continue through this process, we'll lose good troopers, and they'll move on to other departments. And, you know, we really don't have a retirement system like we used to have. It's more of a 401k, so there's not that hold to hold the troopers. They can, and we lose a lot of troopers now to the lower 48 because they have better retirement programs than we do. And actually, their pay is comparable if you look at what they're being paid in lower 48 and some of the police departments to ours. So we're struggling recruiting and retention. And I foresee that continue to happen as we it's easy to run an organization. We have lots of money, but now we have to focus on what our real core missions are, and we need to do those very well. And there's some things that we have routinely done, or they kind of come off our plate. And so it's going to be difficult time, but I'm proud of every member of my department, men and women that wear the uniforms, the dispatchers, the clerks, because they put in their time every day. And they do incredible things and make it look routine every day.
And Mayor Berkowitz, you've only been in the mayor's seat for just a short period of time, but what are you seeing with morale as it relates to public safety and officers out on the streets?
Well, we're focusing on public safety in the law enforcement context, but there's a wider context as well with fire and other emergency services. But, you know, it's very critical that we convey the respect, admiration as elected officials and as the general public that we have for law enforcement. Because if you value their service, there's nothing wrong with saying thank you periodically. There's nothing wrong with recognizing that these individuals are putting themselves into traumatic situations on a daily basis. And one of the consequences of doing it the way we have been doing it, where people are overworked and responding to call after call after call and not having the decompression time where they don't have to respond to people in crises, is that it impacts on our ability to retain individuals. And so what winds up happening is it gets more difficult to keep people engaged in the police department, and I would suspect with the troopers as well. So it's really important to get the right level of staffing. It helps with retention, because the best advocates we can have for recruiting people are the people who have the jobs and who like them.
Sure, absolutely. We only have about 1 minute left, but Colonel Cockrell, I had a question from Talkeetna. The Talkeetna Trooper Post has been closed for most of the summer season. Have you seen impacts from the law enforcement end? What's changed with regard to third shift coverage? And are more calls having to go unanswered? That's a lot to pack into a minute.
Well, as of right now, and I think the recent fire was kind of a demonstration of our commitment to continue to provide services in Talkeetna, even with the ongoing fire and the number of troopers we had assigned to the fire areas. We were still able to maintain a pretty good presence in Talkeetna. We're committed to providing patrol. Every day we have patrol troopers in the Talkeetna area. They're working traffic, answering calls, and without really looking at our numbers, I can't really answer specific to that. But as much as possible, I'm comfortable with what we're doing in Talkeetna. A perfect world would be to keep the troopers there, but we just couldn't make it happen.
Mm. And the future look at, we're not done with cutting the budget in the state, and so are you already putting plans in place for what the troopers might look like in 5 years from now?
We're actually currently working on the FY17 budget. I got to have that to the commissioner's office on the 7th. And the biggest scenario for us would be another 3% reduction, which is better than 5 or 8%, or even a whole tight budget where we're at now. We're looking at right now we're focusing on the next 10 years. What are we going to look like in 10 years? And that's the goal of the administration, and we're working towards that goal.
Well, thank you so much to my guests today, Mayor Ethan Berkowitz, Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz, and Colonel James Cockrell, the head of the Troopers, is also in the studio with us, and Captain Andrew Merrill, also with the Troopers in the VPSO program.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Garrison Keillor, one of the most beloved radio hosts and acclaimed humorists, is coming to the Alaska State Fair with his America the Beautiful tour on Sunday, August 30th at 3 p.m. This 2.5-hour show will feature Prairie Home Companion classics with piano master Richard Dworsky, sound effects man Fred Newman, and other special guests. Tickets at alaskastatefair.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.